Today is Tuesday, the 7th of August, year 2007. My name is Ole Terkelsen. I am a Dane. I'm living in Copenhagen. We are in Martinus Center, Klint, 100 kilometers from Copenhagen. In this week, I have an English study group, and I would like to talk a little bit about my new book, which has been published in Danish, Martinus, Darwin and Intelligent Design, in this little study group. Welcome to Martinus, Darwin and Intelligent Design. Yes, I would like to talk a little bit about my new book. I have written a book and the Danish title is Martinus, Darwin and Intelligent Design, and it was published on May the 16th. Of this year, 2007. And I was very happy that now it was only printed in 1,200 copies. That's the size you normally print books in Denmark. But already after 2 months, the Borgens publishers had sold half of the edition. So I was very proud and they were very satisfied that it has been selling so good here. I think that was a little surprise. And now there is one who has translated it into English, or at least he has translated 10 chapters into English. So I hope in less than a year, maybe, the book will be translated into English. In a way, my book is an introductory book to Martinus cosmology. But as I am a biochemist and a biologist and a chemist, I also entitled it not only Martinus Cosmology, but also Martinus Darwin and Intelligent Design to make it more, it's more in the time that that's a big topic in the English-speaking countries. In United States, there is a fundamental movement that is the conservative Christians or the right-wing Christians. They want to have a big influence on political life in the United States. So there is a kind of cultural battle or fight going on in the States. And these Christian people, they want that the creation from the Bible is taught in school in biology. And you know that according to the Bible, God created the world in 6 days. And on the first day, he created heaven and earth. And on the fourth day, birds and fishes. On the sixth day, animals and reptiles. On the sixth day, human beings. And on the seventh day, he took free and he was quite satisfied with himself because God said, everything is very good. And many people believe literally in this creation. And this theory they call creationism. And then in the United States, they want to teach creationism in the biological classes. And that has gone to court. It has even gone to the Supreme Court of the United States. And they have said they are not allowed to teach creationism in biology classes in schools where taxpayers are paying for the teaching. Maybe you could do it in a private school, but it's forbidden to teach creationism in biology classes in the United States. And then in around 88 or 89, they should publish a new book about creationism. But then they got a new tactic. They said, we are not allowed to teach creationism in school because it's not a science. Okay, then we'll make it into a science. And then they changed the name into Intelligent Design. And this book that was around to be published, they took out the word creationism all over, and then they put the word Intelligent Design in instead of. And then they claim, now Intelligent Design is a scientific theory. It has nothing to do with God. It has nothing to do with religion. And the purpose with this Intelligent Design theory is to prove Darwin wrong. And they think, then there are some Christian scientists. They have a lot of findings and experiments. And then they have had some results which shows this cannot be explained by the theory of Darwin. And the question is, what is the cause to the creation of the complex organisms in nature? And when they think they have proved Darwin wrong, their conclusion is there must be another cause. there must be an intelligent cause, then actually the theory stops here, because they are not allowed to refer to God or to religion. So in a way, the theory is very simple, and it's a little bit strange about this scientific theory. It only has one purpose, and that is to show that another theory is wrong. And just when they've shown it is wrong, there's another cause, there is an intelligent cause, and then there is not no more to talk about. But seen from the cosmological point of view, the theory of Darwin is also a very simple theory. Darwinism does not explain the origin of life. When they don't explain how the first cell came around, but it takes, if there is a living being, this living being can develop into direct, this species can develop into different directions because of geographical isolation. If there's a big mountains and this species, some of them live on one side and some live on the other side, and then if there are different conditions, they may adapt to these conditions in different ways, and in that way they can grow away from each other. Or if there is one species that is spread out over 2-3 islands that are somewhat isolated from each other, and there are different conditions on these islands, they can also adapt to these special conditions, and then they are growing. So the theory of Darwin postulates the evolution takes place by small changes. And he says there is a row of small changes. And he think if it can be shown that a complex organism has not come around by small continuous changes, the whole theory will fall down. And that's what the people intelligent design, they have taken that out of Darwin's book. When Darwin's book was published, The Origin of Species was published in 1859. That started a huge debate. It was really a bestseller. They said the very first day the book was published, it was sold out. And then as soon as they printed a new version, it was immediately sold out. And there was a very, very strong debate, because then there was a debate between scientists and people who believed in the religions. And it's interesting to see that this debate has gone on for 150 years. And you could ask yourself, how is it possible that a debate can go on for 150 years? I guess the reason must be that both are right. If one part was totally right and the other part was totally wrong, I cannot imagine that such a debate could go on for 150 years. But some of the viewpoints of Darwin are right, but also some of the viewpoints from the intelligent design is right. And for that reason, they can go on fighting each other. But there are two basic things in Darwinism. The first one is that we can see in the nature there is a natural variation. And in 1953, they found the structure of the double helix. This is the DNA molecule that is a double helix, and they found the genes in the chromosomes. And then they knew when this helix should be copied. This helix, double helix, is divided into two single helixes, and then they are made a copy of these. But sometimes when you make a copy, there can be some little mistake. One nucleotide can be wrong, or something can be forgotten, or one unit can be changed with another unit. So these are small mistakes. And these mistakes, when these DNA strings are copied, are called mutations. So these changes takes place by chance, because of the randomness, and there can be some changes. And then most of these changes do not give an advantage, but very, very few percentage of these mutations give an advantage in the struggle for life. And then these mutations that give an advantage can be given or passed on to the next generation. And that is what they call the natural selection. We can see in nature there is a battle for life, a struggle for life. And Darwin talked about the survival of the fittest. And these is the two main elements in Darwinism, that is mutations and natural selection. And they say this is the cause to the creation of the complex organisms in nature. So in a way, that is also a very, very simplified theory. And I would also say the intelligent design theory is also very, very simplified, at least compared to Martinus' cosmical explanation. And Martinus, he can show where Darwin is right and where intelligent design is right. So he really shows what is true in the two theories. And he shows that their local position in the whole cosmical evolution. Intelligent design, they do not believe that human beings has developed from the apes. That was also terrible things for the religious people when Darwin postulated in 59 that that human beings once had been apes. They couldn't tolerate that. They couldn't accept that. So now they are finding a lot of fossils. And then they say, if there has been a continuous or gradual evolution, there must be many intermediate states between the different species. And there is a lot of these intermediate states that we have not yet found. And at that time in 59, when he had published his book, there was no intermediate states between reptiles and birds. But imagine, 2 years after, in 1861, they found the first specimen of Archaeopteryx, this reptile with wings and bird's feathers. And then that really started the debate once again that they found. And Darwin, he had to admit that there was a lot of intermediate stages that had not been found yet, but he was sure that they would be found in the future. But there is still a lot of these intermediate forms that has not been found. And that is used very much by intelligent design as an argument against Darwin. But I found one place in the book Logic of Martinus. That's also translated into English. And then Martinus says that all evolution takes place by small gradual changes. And Martinus says, each time when you have made an experience, you have developed. Each time when you have trained and practiced, you have developed. So for that reason, it's right that evolution takes place by small, gradual changes. And then Martinus writes that even though science today have not found these intermediate forms, they can have existed. You cannot prove that they have not existed just because science today have not found these forms. But Martinus, he wrote Logic already in 1935. So he said this science is still very young. So he was convinced also that they would find many other forms. And at that time, they were talking a lot about the missing link. And that's these intermediate forms between apes and human beings. But I guess today they are hardly not speaking about the missing link anymore, because now they have found so many intermediate forms. After World War II, they really started to dig in Africa, and they have found a lot of intermediate forms. So I think that science today have the general idea that now we have found the missing link, that there is evidence that we have. But I guess the intelligent design, they can never prove Darwin wrong because science not have found these forms. They might very, if an animal dies, it's a very, very rare, very seldom phenomenon that it's fossilized. So and they can have lived in regions where no fossils were created and so on. So you cannot really prove that way. But I guess the best argument for intelligent design is in biochemistry. I'm a biochemist myself, and in a way, biochemistry is the chemistry of the cell. And then they compare the cell to man-made machines. And if you take an old-fashioned clock, there is a lot of different wheels in the clock. And if you take up one single part of the clock, the whole clock might not function any longer. And also, if you have a car, if you are just cutting one cable or plugging out one little element, then the car cannot drive. That means that it's a very complex structure, and the whole complex structure doesn't work if a single component is. In Copenhagen, there is some 1 million people, and maybe there is 500,000 of houses. But even if you took away 10 houses, or 100 houses, or 1,000 houses, Copenhagen will still work. So that you could reduce Copenhagen, and it would still function. But in the cell, you cannot reduce it and still expect it to function. If you cannot produce one single enzyme, that could be enough. The whole chemistry would stop, and the cell would die. So that is what they call a irreducible complexity. It is a complexity that cannot take that is reduced, but there are other phenomena. They can be reduced and still function. And there is also one of the classical arguments for intelligent design, that is the blood coagulation. And when we have a wound, it starts to bleed. And if the bleeding goes on and on and on, we will lose so much blood that we'd die from it. But the blood coagulates. And now the biochemist knows that we have 10 enzymes that has to work and function in a row in order to the blood can coagulate. And I guess that was some English kings or queens or their offspring had some, they were Spanish. Yeah, Spanish, they were bleeders. And they found out, maybe it was enzyme number 7 or 9, I don't remember, but there was just one of these 10 enzymes that couldn't produce. And for that reason, it didn't work at all. And then the question is, if these enzymes are created through small gradual changes, what would the advantage be with an enzyme that doesn't work? That would not give any advantage in the struggle for life. And that is what Darwin says, that a mutation will only be passed on to the next generation if it gives an advantage in the survival. So it's hard to explain from Darwinism how these 10 enzymes came around. And there is also this metabolism, how the cells can burn sugar with oxygen. And there is the glucolase and Krebs cyclus and the electron transportation chain, and there is at least 20 enzymes are needed to burn sugar with oxygen. So in the beginning, the most primitive microorganism, they were anaerobic. They didn't use oxygen. But then the cell should learn to use oxygen. But then you have to have 20 enzymes before you can burn oxygen. How did it start? It cannot have started that you have created 5, 10, 15 enzymes. It still gives no advantage in the survival. So it cannot have come around in a Darwinian way. So I think there the intelligent design has some very good arguments. And man-made machines can only come around through an intelligence. So the construction of the enzymes and the whole cell must also have come around by some kind of intelligence. But I should also talk about the theory of Martinus. And I only have 1 hour here. So I cannot go into too many details, but I would mention that what is very important in Martinus' teaching, that is that he has created an eternal world picture. And there is a big difference between created things and eternal things. And our science today does not work with eternal things. But from a philosophical point of view, there are only two possibilities. Life have had a begin, or life had not had a begin. And natural science is convinced that the universe have had a begin, and life have had a begin. But they cannot really explain why did the universe explode at Big Bang, and how could some dead matter turn into living matter. Actually, they have not really explained it. So I would call that a hocus-pocus theory. But the scientists, they are attacking the religious people and saying it is a hocus-pocus theory, because at the first time, there was only God. And I think it must have been quite boring for God. What was there to do before he had created the world? there must have been nothing to do. But then suddenly God in 6 days created the whole universe and man. That's also a kind of hocus pocus theory. So I would say all theories that deals with the begin, they are illogical. And the basis of natural science, that is the law of cause and effect. And you will always ask, why is it so, and why is it so, and why is it so? Then you have to go in the past, and there must also always have been another past which can explain why it's so. Because if you have something that have had a begin, you cannot argue for this beginning. Why did it? Then the law of cause and effect doesn't work any longer. If the law of cause and effect has to have an eternal existence, life, the matter must have existed eternally. But the material science think that they have proved in a scientific way how life came around. But I must say, as a biochemist and a biologist, natural science has not explained how life was created. In the first place, there was this Big Bang explosion. And then there was created two elements, hydrogen and helium. 75% was hydrogen and 25% helium. That was the first gas cloud in the universe. And thanks to changes that takes place by chance or random processes, heavier elements are created, simple molecules are created, more complicated molecules, highly complicated nuclein acids, sugars and fats and hormones and the DNA, RNA molecules. All these were created by chance, and it's against all probability that it could be. And then, when they by chance had got very, very complicated, life emerged by itself, by chance. And they think they have explained it, but have not explained it, because it takes a lot to explain. How can some dead molecules turn into molecules with consciousness? How can dead molecules turn into living beings? They have not explained it. But they think they have explained it, but there is no explanation. Martina says that the energy has an eternal existence. And actually, science can accept that theory because they have a sentence of the constancy of energy. The energy is constant. You cannot create energy out of nothing, and energy cannot be turned into nothing. Then, when energy is constant, energy is eternal. And for that reason, if you ask why does the energy exist, there's no explanation. It just simply exists. It's something that exists. It have not had a beginning. It is an eternal thing. And then Martinus explains, consciousness is an eternal thing. And what is there more to explain? For example, if you say the sum of energy is constant, that is the same as saying the energy is existing constantly. And what is there more to explain? It simply exists. You cannot explain anymore. You cannot explain more about an eternal thing. And then Martinus claims that consciousness is also eternal, and he cannot explain anymore because it has eternally existed. It is the same impossible to explain how consciousness came from something dead as it is to explain that energy has come from nothing. You cannot create energy out of nothing. You cannot create consciousness out of something dead. So I would say, okay, if natural science is right, they still have to prove or explain how something dead turned into something alive. But Martinus, he has no more problems. And then Martinus is also speaking about an eternal I, an eternal self. And that means that a living being, according to Martinus, is built up by an eternal I that have a consciousness that can use the energies. That is a living being. And then he explains that all living beings are eternal living beings. But of course, there are two possibilities. The living beings are something created with a begin, or living being is something eternal, which have had no beginning. And I mean, that's really the turning point. There are a lot of people who say, Martinus cosmology, that's not science. But I would claim that Martinus, he makes no mistakes in his whole work, in his all 8,000 pages. He doesn't make any mistake. It's just the beginning. sometimes you have an axiom, you have a starting point. And of course you can discuss the starting point. That might be wrong. But after you have had your starting point, there is no mistakes. And then Martinus' starting point is quite simply, energy exists eternally, consciousness exists eternally, the self or the I exists eternally, which means life is an eternal existent phenomenon. And the others has this hocus-pocus theory that life came around, created by God or by chance at a certain time, and they cannot really explain why it came around and why did it come around at that time. Couldn't it have been some soon or somewhat later? But now I try to explain what Martinus thinks about evolution, and it's rather complicated. So I would take some inner factors and some outer factors in this creation of the complicated, complex organisms. To me, it's so strange that the consciousness of the living being itself doesn't play any role in the evolution. In intelligent design, you don't know who has created it. Maybe it's God who has created it. And in natural science, it's created by chance. So I think it's a very strange theory of evolution that the consciousness of the single individual being, it doesn't play any role. Because what do you know about evolution? You know from your own life, all experiences in human life shows that you can only develop through experiences, training and practice. So it's a very strange theory that the biological evolution has nothing to do with consciousness, but all that we have in our, if you want to be a good tennis player or chess player or a good singer, there's only one way that you can develop through practicing and changing, through small changes you can develop. And Martinus talks about the energy of memory. Each time when a living being makes an experience, there is made a copy of this experience, and this copy is stored. So no single experience is wasted. But in a way, all experiences done by the individuals are wasted in the Darwinism. It is not the experiences that brings the evolution forward. It is only the mutations. You have to wait for a mutation to take place, and then it will give an advantage, and then you can develop. But without mutations, nothing happens. And these mutations is the result of randomness, things that takes place by chance. So you cannot do anything yourself to accelerate the evolution. You just, oh, maybe if you with some radiation could create some more mutations. Okay, then you might speed up. But it's a very strange theory that consciousness doesn't play any role at all when it plays the biggest role in our own personal evolution. But you could imagine, then we take copies of all experiences. There ought to be an overload. You know, when you have a computer and some disk, sometime you cannot store more information. Then you have to buy a new diskette or a new computer. But then Martinus talks about talent kernels. I would say memories, they are normally day consciousness. You are brain conscious or day conscious in your memories. But then Martinus talks about the creation of a talent. And he also speaks of knowledge. A talent or knowledge can appear in three stages. That is A, B, C. A, knowledge is a knowledge that you have brain conscious or day conscious. And it's also, then you have the talent on the A stage. Maybe you know something, you wish to create a talent. It could be music playing or math or something. You understand something about it, and then you want to become good at playing. And the next stage, B, you start to practice and train, and you put your will into this training process. Once I learned to write on a typewriter or a computer, and then there is this 10-finger system, so you can type without looking at the typeboard. And I took such a course, and to me, I really felt it's a little miracle. The first time I experienced that my fingers wrote a word without I was aware of it. It was such a miracle. Oh, my fingers just wrote a word. I was not aware of it. It was a kind of miracle. And then it was not in my day consciousness. I was not brain conscious about it. It had entered another stage. That's what Martinus calls B, B knowledge or B stage. So the B knowledge once was conscious, but now it's sort of going automatically. And then you could go on and go on by this training until you become a genius. It goes automatically. So then it has reached its C stage. So in a way, everything that takes place automatically once was a day conscious knowledge, but it has been practiced so much that it goes automatically. And what is so special about Martinus' description of the living being is that the eternal living being has two parts. There is an eternal part and a created part. And the eternal part doesn't change. And the eternal part can survive the death of the body. And then Martinus explains that these talent kernels are stored in the eternal part of the living being. And that is in this part that Martinus calls the superconsciousness. He is also talking about X2, the eternal body or the fate element. And that's almost the same description. X2 is made up of the energy that he calls the mother energy. So X2 is the creative power, the fate element, the eternal element. And that is the secret behind the evolution. That no experience, no training, no practice is wasted compared to the whole evolution. All experiences are stored. And I mean, that's really something that gives a meaning in life. Because the other theory, life came around by chance. There's no purpose and you can only improve if there's some new mutations. And your experiences, they don't play any role. But in Martinus' cosmology, I think it's so fantastic. No single experience is wasted in relation to the evolution. Even if it's bad experiences. Sometimes you could say that the bad experiences are the most valuable. When you make a lot of mistakes, you can learn later on to avoid the mistakes. So I think it's a wonderful thought that life has a meaning, nothing is wasted. And we have this eternal, these talent kernels are created. They can exist for billions of years. Martinus also explains that the organs and the cells, they also go by automatic functions. So Martinus actually think that in previous spiral cycles, in our past evolution, actually we are organisms. We have an organism. But before we were organs. We have been organs ourselves in the past. Once we have been cells, we have even been molecules and atoms. And all these automatic functions of atoms, molecules, cells, organs, we have trained them ourselves. So we have still kept our talent kernels that we have created in these past. But there was one man who asked Martinus, for how long time can you keep these talent kernels? And he said, we will keep them as long as they play a role in the service of life. As long as a living being can use these talent kernels in its life experience and in its manifestations, they will rest. But at a certain time, they sort of disappear in super microcosmos and you don't need them anymore. So when a thing is needed, it would degenerate. So also for that reason, it will not come to an overload. But that's really the super consciousness, you could say that's really the hard disk of life, because all information is stored on this. Science has found out that there is a lot of information in the DNA molecules. It's amazing. You can just take one cell from a sheep, one cell from a cow, and then with cloning, you can create a whole new living being. So in this cell, the nucleus of the cell, there is these 23 pairs of chromosomes. And there is the whole information of how to create eyes and liver and kidneys and how to create hormones and how to create hair and the whole physiology and everything that is stored there. There is a huge amount of information in these DNA molecules. And then you could ask, how did this information come around? And the answer is by chance, by randomness. Combined with the natural selection. They talk about a spontaneous creation. They say things create themselves. I cannot go into too much detail with it, but in the thermodynamics, there is the second law about entropy. And it tells that when processes take place spontaneously in nature, structure is always lost. If you, for example, have a house and you don't maintain it, the house will degrade and it'll be destroyed. All the structure would disappear. If you are writing in the sand down here at the beach, if you are building a sand castle, what happens to the castle? All the structures will disappear from spontaneous structures. One volcano can destroy 100 houses, but 100 volcanoes cannot build one house. And you can buy all the timber and all the windows and all the stones, and you can let then be exposed to all randomness and hazardous changes. It will never turn into a house because all spontaneous processes in nature degrades the structure. That's sort of very in a popular way that the law of entropy is saying. So it's very hard, even with a scientific, from a scientific point of view, to believe that the complex organisms is a result of spontaneous processes. But I cannot say that's a proof, but I think natural science has a very, very weak point. They cannot give a logical explanation of the collection of information. That's for the first. You start life with a lot of information in your DNA molecules. Then, during the whole life, you are collecting information. You are going to school, you are having your education, you are a good citizen, you do your work and you specialize. The whole life you collect a lot of information. But what happens when you die? It disappears in the blue air. So it's very strange theory. You start the life with a lot of information coming out of the blue air. Then you collect information the whole time. But that's wasted. It disappears out in the blue air. So, I mean, it is two or three theories. Information comes around by nothing, and all collection of information is wasted. It's much more logical with the cosmology of Martinus. Of course, it says all the information that exists has been collected in the past. That's much more logical. But that's because the materialists, they believe in the physical body, and you're only a living being as long as you have the physical body. If there was a very clever man who could explain to me how it's possible I could be born for the first time, I would like to explain how it was possible to be born the second time. But that's impossible. They agree on it's possible that you can be born the first time, but I mean, that's a bigger miracle. Then you could be born the second time, isn't it? I mean, if it's possible to be born once, why shouldn't I? Couldn't I be born twice? But that's from Martinus' point of view, the living being has an eternal structure, and then it has a tool if you have to manifest yourself in the physical world and experience through the physical world. You have to have a tool. So the body is only a tool for the consciousness. And that's also a very, very interesting difference between natural science and Martinus. Natural science thinks, first, we had this gas from Big Bang with hydrogen and helium. And then by randomness, by processes that takes place by chance, life is produced. And they even think that our consciousness is produced from the physical brain. I think they call it epiphenomenology. That means they think that consciousness and life is produced from physical matter. So their theory is physical matter or dead matter is the cause of the existence of consciousness. And Martinus says all matter is material for the consciousness. Now I want to stretch my arm, I'm moving my arm. I do this as an example. It is my consciousness that governs the matter. But the others say, no, it's the matter that governs consciousness. And that is, as I say, they have never explained how matter can produce consciousness. But the modern brain research, they still think that it is the physical brain that produces. So that is really, what's right and what is wrong? Is it so that matter is a material for consciousness, or is the matter is the cause to the existence of consciousness? And you could say either theory could be true, but I think the most logical in Martinus' cosmology, the basic argument of Martinus is something cannot be created from nothing, and something cannot be turned into nothing. So Martinus say we have something called consciousness. Consciousness cannot have been created of something that is not consciousness. Consciousness cannot have been created from something dead, and consciousness cannot be turned into something. That's the same logic. Earth's energy cannot be created from nothing. Energy cannot be transformed into nothing. So in a way, you can say the other two theories, but to me, Martinus theory is the most logical. And that is also, Martinus says, it is the creator with the created power that has created the created things. But matter, these created things, then actually natural science claims it is the created things that have created the creator. And that is, in a way, ridiculous. It is a ridiculous theory, they think. But things, if I go to school and I have first class, there are kids of 7 years, I ask, how has this book been created? It has created itself. How has this shirt been created? And the child answers, it has created itself. And I say, no. I wouldn't say it, but it's a little stupid child. How can you believe the shirt can create yourself? How can you believe that a table can create itself? It's impossible. But actually, that is what natural science believes. They believe that life has been created by itself, that life, the consciousness, and the complex organisms has been created by itself. So, Martinus talk a lot of these talent kernels. The results, the essence of all experiences are stored in talent kernels that are put into this eternal structure. And they are put into this part that Martinus calls X2 with the mother energy, the creative power. And Martinus doesn't write it explicitly, but I would claim that this creative power with its talent kernels can provoke mutations. And this creative power with the talent kernels can select the mutations that are useful for it in the evolution. So, as a parallel to natural selection, I invented the word spiritual selection. Because, according to me or Martinus, a gene or mutation can only be transferred to the next generation if there is a talent kernel behind that can use this talent. So, in a way, the genes are a copy of the talent kernels. And just as you can have a document in your computer, you could say, now I'll make a new print. Then you can also say, when you are born, you have made a new print of your talent kernels, of your documents. Then, when you die and are born the next time, you have stored somewhat more information in your talent kernels than in the previous life. Therefore, when you make a new print, that will be higher developed than the first one. So then you will sort of get better genes next time. Apart from this spiritual suicide Martinus talks about, you can temporarily destroy your talent kernels with alcohol and drugs. And if you are drug addict or addicted to alcohol through 3-4 lives, you can destroy your talent kernels to such a degree that you are born handicapped. And when a child is born with a disease, it's because this person has lived in a wrong way in the past. So it's on good on bad that we carry on the results from one life to the next life. So known people, famous people, they write their biography, they write about their lives. It's interesting to read it. But in a way, every single person has written its own biography, because our DNA molecules, that is our biography. One part of our brain is the reptile brain, and some part of this body was already created as mammals, already created as reptiles. Something was created already as we were fish. You can see that in the genes and chromosomes. So in a way, I think it's a fascinating thought. Your whole history is written in DNA molecules. And Martinus says it's good with death, because if you couldn't change the tool, you couldn't advance in the evolution. Then we will still be reptiles or apes. So it's good that you can make a new print of your talent, so you can get a body that corresponds to your talent kernels. And there is also a driving force in the evolution. According to natural science, randomness is the motor in the evolution. That is what creates new changes. Martinus says the living being is an eternal living being, and it functions eternally. And why does it function eternally? It just simply functions eternally. That's the way it's created, and it's an eternal function. But then he tries to describe it in details. What are the mechanisms in this eternal function? And he says, the first is the primordial desire. In all living beings, there eternally exists a primordial desire. All living beings has a desire to experience life. And later on, this principle of hunger and satiation, it's so that you have some wishes, you want to have them fulfilled. And there is two kinds of experiences. There's the pleasant things and the unpleasant things. And all living beings are thriving to experience something pleasant and to avoid the unpleasant. And that is due to the principle of hunger and satiation. That is an eternal principle. All living beings have something in common. They want to experience the pleasant things and they want to avoid the unpleasant things. And that is the struggle for life. So we have eternally an urge to live. We have a hunger. We really want to experience what is best. That is the driving force in evolution. And that is a conscious force. But in the other theory, it's just randomness. It's just things that takes place by chance. So I really think they miss a very important part. And that is the two main inner factors. You have this wish to experience life. And Martinus also say, what makes the evolution, the whole spiral cycle go around? That's just simply wish and desires. And all wishes and all desires are eventually fulfilled. It is like a magnet. We attract all the energies that we wish and want. But sometimes we're impatient. We want everything to take place in this lifetime. But sometimes we have to wait for the next and the next and the next life. But it will eventually come. And then there is the outer factors in the evolution, because this is a creative process. And it is like in the school. If you want to develop, there is a pupil, there must be a school, and there must be a teacher. And then the inner factors, that's the work that has to be done by the pupil. Then there must be a school, and the school is the physical world. And Martinus puts it so fantastic, the meaning of the physical world is evolution. The meaning of the physical world is you should develop from minerals to plants to animals to terrestrial man to real human beings. So the whole physical world is one big project of evolution. We are advancing all the time. But of course, natural science says it's religious to talk about a purpose of life, to talk about a purpose of evolution. But Martina says the purpose of the evolution is to produce the perfect human being. And it's also put in a beautiful way in the Bible, and Martinus thinks it's an important thing in the Bible, where God says that he wants to create man in his image after his likeness. Because that is actually what is taking place in the physical world, because there is a teacher in the school of life. The physical world is the school of life, but there is a teacher in the school of life. And Martinus has this cosmical point of view that the whole universe is one single living being. And God is all and all is God. And all living beings are cells in God's body. So that means we are also a part of God. And from one point of view, there are only two living beings. It's myself and the living universe. Then life experience is a communication between one single living being and the whole universe. So it's a talk, it's a conversation. And Martinus says it's very important for human beings to start to become aware, to be conscious about this conversation. But just like I have organs to walk with, that's my legs, I have organs to look, to see with, that's my eyes. Every function has to have a certain organ. So of course the whole universe of the Godhead also have to have organs to perform all these different functions. And then actually God or the universe can talk to one human being through other human beings. And that means that life is teaching us. And Martinus explains that a movement cannot take place along a right line. And that's also a straight line. That's also what astronomy has come up to today, that the universe must be curved. The straight line doesn't exist. So in a way, maybe it's also a consequence of the relativity theories of Einstein that the universe must be curved. A movement can only go in curves or in circles. And something dead cannot send out an energy. Only something living can send out a movement. So for that reason, when the living has sent out a movement, that will eventually return to the living beings. The law of karma is the way you are taught in the school of life. But there is a consciousness behind. So the direct speed of life is an expression of love and entertainment. That's good and nice. But the direct speech of life is also experienced as education and bringing up. So when we've got problems, it hurts. We are really learning a lot, but that hurts a little bit. That is the teaching or bringing up. In order to become a lovable being, you also have to learn the opposite. You have to know the difference between good and evil. And when you're totally conscious knows, that's good, that's evil. You can choose to avoid the evil and only do the good. And then you can become a Christ being, a perfect human being. So the purpose of the physical world, the purpose of the Darwinian evolution is to produce the perfect human beings. And then there is one more little detail that I would like to mention, and that is that Martinus actually is talking about a spiritual kingdom called the kingdom of wisdom, which is the culmination of intelligence. And we are all going through this spiral cycle, and once in the future, we will also ourselves go into this kingdom of wisdom. And we can bring all the knowledge from our science into that kingdom. And they are working with the creation of new forms, with new bodies of plants and animals. And all the inventions made by human beings in this lifetime about computers and mobile phones and satellites and different machines, he says it is possible to use these principles in the creation of new bodies, because if you have an eternal life, you should eternally be able to experience something new. And for that reason, you should also have new tools to experience life in a new way. And of course, solar system, planets, human beings, organs, cells, molecules, atoms, they experience life in a totally different way. And there's no limitations to how it can be varied in details. So that's also interesting. For each spiral cycle, we'll visit the kingdom of wisdom, and then we can change or upgrade all these organisms. So there is a function in the structure of the whole universe, how you can create new organisms all the time. So Martinus, he really speaks of an intelligent design. He says this intelligent design is created in the kingdom of wisdom. And when we get cosmic consciousness, we can work together with living beings in microcosmos. They have such a lot of intuition. So we can go down in microcosmos, up in macrocosmos. So this creative process in the kingdom of wisdom is also, they're also working together in the different spirals, the planets, because a planet should be built up by living organisms that are built up with organs and cells. So there's also a big co-working there between the spirals. So Martina thinks that the biochemistry of the cell, in a way, it has been invented in laboratories in the past on other planets and so on. So the heart is a pumping machine, and the kidneys is a filtration machine, and our fingers and toes, that are cranes. And so Martinus thinks that all parts of the organism has been created in a mechanical world. For example, in biochemistry, there is a lot of enzymes, and they have to have a special form or configuration, sterical. But in a way, it's simple mechanics, and they have been built models, and you have really tried in practice to see that these things fits into each other, and then later on you can create it in organisms. And he says all these inventions, they can be used and repeated in such a way that all these inventions are built in the talent kernels of the living being. But he doesn't really explain in detail how all these ideas and routines function. But in a way, they are sort of repeated and repeated. So they are built in the talent kernels of the living beings. So when the human beings started in the mineral kingdom and plant kingdom, it was already planned that human beings should have 10 fingers and 10 toes and 2 eyes. And also the eye, according to Martinus, once was a camera, because there is a lens and just like an optic, like just like in a camera. So he said the simplest form of an eye started as the invention of a camera. And later on, it was built in a physical matter. So for that reason, it's also interesting that Martinus is actually talking about an intelligent design. But this design is built in the talent kernels. So the living beings has to develop these machines or organs gradually. So plants, they are already now starting to train the creation of an eye, because they need the light for the photosynthesis, and they can direct the leaves so that they get sunshine. And they have some cells around the special where the air, where the oxygen is going out and carbon dioxide is going in, these small cells, they are specially sensitive to light. In a way, that's the beginning of the eye. But they cannot see anything, but they become more and more and more and more sensitive to light. And then also primitive animals have primitive eyes, and more developed animals have more developed eyes. That means, in a way, you shall train the perception of life yourself. You shall train and train and train. Over billions of years, you are training and training in the perception of life. So in a way, you are doing your own work to develop the organ. But on the other hand, it's still an invention that was put down in your talent kernel. So it's someone double. Also, these fingers are cranes that are once developed. But we have very sensitive fingers compared to gorillas or elephants. So we have really trained this motorical function very much. So in a way, it is an invention. But on the other hand, you have to do the work yourself. So that's also according with the Darwinism, because you have to train and practice, which make changes, small gradual changes. So yes, Darwin is right. The creation of the organisms takes place through small gradual changes. That's right. Then they say there must be an intelligence behind the eye, the cells. Yes, that's right. So you should say the one thing doesn't exclude the other thing, or you should say that the divine creation takes place by a gradual evolution. Or you could say evolution is designed. So Martinus, it's a kind of a compromise between the two, or it's a much bigger system that Martinus has constructed. But to me, it's really interesting that Martinus has really shown this third solution, which shows there are something right in both theories. But if you want to know more about this subject, I would recommend you to buy my book when it is published in English, and then you can read more about it in detail. I was very happy to meet you, and thank you very much for your interest. Thank you.